This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll talk to Johnny Gall, founder of Dirtbag Darling, about how the Oru Kayak helps her escape the crowds. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
So I work as a software QA engineer for a financial company. Very, very different from the outdoor world. I always feel so awkward when people are like, oh, what did you do this weekend? I just went camping. Let's just go with that.
This is Paulina Dow. She's what a lot of people call a weekend warrior. As she jokes, she works a full-time job. She spends a lot of her free time at the climbing gym, and she heads out on the weekends to camp, backpack, climb, and hike. Paulina is constantly challenging herself, but she wouldn't say that she's special. She recognizes that she has a lot of room to grow. In some ways, I saw some of my younger and current self in Paulina. She downplays her accomplishments, but I don't think that she should. Paulina says she's not a writer, and I can't say I believe that. I ran into Paulina via her online presence. She runs a blog called Little Grunts, and I was first drawn into a blog post she wrote about diversity in outdoor media, entitled, Why Don't They Look Like Me? We talk about it later in this episode, but first we talk about how Paulina discovered the outdoors growing up in the Santa Cruz area of California.
I grew up really close to the Santa Cruz Mountains, and somebody had told my parents about the summer camp up there. So they ended up sending me, my little brother, and my little sister into the mountains. And I loved it so much that when I was too old to attend, I came back and I started volunteering there for like 3 weeks every summer. And that's kind of just how everything took off. I went backpacking with them. And then I also went to school in Santa Cruz, just in the forest. So every single day you're hiking to class because it's a lot easier than waiting for a bus or trying to get somebody to drive you around.
She cut out a bit there, but she mentioned that she went to college in Santa Cruz. If you remember from our first episode, this is where Liz Song went as well. It seems to breed outdoor lovers. Paulina tells us about her blog.
I started Little Grunts because I had just graduated from college and I was like, I have a job, I have all this money, and I have this terrible gear. I think my hiking boots were probably 10 years old at that point and barely staying together. So I was like, I'm looking for women's gear. And I was looking for reviews on them online. And most of the reviews were from like Backpacker Magazine, Outside Magazine, where they go through a ton of extensive testing. But then they basically just write three lines about it. And it really didn't tell me anything about like, would this fit me? Would this work for me? Because I'm 5 feet tall. I weigh like 100 pounds. So I really wanted to start writing gear reviews for people who are like me.
The site seems to be broken up into two categories, excursions and gear. But you do fit in some thought pieces as well. So how do you balance your content?
Honestly, it's just whatever I have time for at the moment. Like the diversity piece that I wrote was something I had been thinking about for a long time. And it's not really something that I write about very often because it's like you take a piece of yourself and you put it out there and it's kind of vulnerable. Maybe people will hate it. So I primarily focus on gear reviews and trip reports just because it's really easy and there's less room for people to say you suck. The big thing I'm doing right now is just a lot of bouldering, and I don't find writing up about bouldering to be very interesting. I'm not going to go out and read it or seek it out by myself. So during times like the winter where I'm primarily bouldering, it'll be a lot of gear reviews. But then in the summer, it's a lot of alpine, a lot of backpacking. And so it'll shift towards more trip reports.
Looking through your blog, I was drawn to a piece that you wrote about climbing the Matterhorn. I understood your feeling. So in the piece, you expressed frustration about like how awful you felt on the trail and that you kind of felt like the trip was a failure. But reading the piece, I also got the feeling that you don't really like expressing any kind of weakness around your experiences in the outdoors. I was kind of wondering whether you think that women at times can put up a guard in the outdoors or around their outdoor experiences. Why did you feel like by saying that you felt tired on that trip that you were expressing weakness?
A majority of my partners are male. I go outdoors primarily with my boyfriend. And so I want to be able to keep up and, you know, be one of the guys. So that way, the next time they go on a cool trip or he plans something cool, he's not like, oh, like, I don't really want you to come with me because you'll just slow me down. Just being able to push through and not like express like how exactly I'm feeling is something that will contribute to me not being left behind.
Have you ever been left behind?
Actually, I've not, but I don't really want it to come up in conversation where, oh, I'm like thinking about doing this crazy ridge traverse, but you know what? You can't come with me. So that's really my biggest fear. And actually, after that trip, we were on our way back, and my boyfriend and I were just camping somewhere, and we started talking about the John Muir Trail. And he was just like, you know what? I don't think I would want to do the JMT with you because you would just be a little bit slow. And I like hike a lot faster than you, and I would want to do it in 2 weeks. And I know you would want to do it in like 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't think we could ever do the John Muir Trail together. And I'm just like, why would you say that to me? Because you know how much I want to do the JMT. But then funny enough, I think earlier this week, he's like, hey, do you want to do the JMT this summer? And I was like, hello, you just told me, well, you told me 6 months ago you didn't want to do the JMT with me. But at the same time, I think I've started trying to get better at expressing how I'm feeling, because I am so terrible at altitude. Put me at 8,000 feet coming from sea level, and I am huffing and puffing, and I'm super slow. Like, I have mega headaches. And being able to say that is really good, because it forces him to be more patient, or to just like take into perspective like how I might be feeling. If we're backpacking, we're usually carrying the same weight load too, just because I want to be like, no, this is my half, and this is your half, and this is all of our stuff. We're carrying the same stuff. But then he's just like, oh, I weigh like 70 more pounds than you do. And, you know, I was in the Marines and I'm like super strong, so why don't I just take some of that? I don't know. It's really hard to find that balance of like being too proud to accept help and just say, you know, I'm maybe not doing as well as I thought I would be doing.
I just want to take a minute here to talk about mismatch in skills. I think most of us have been here. It doesn't have to be a romantic partner who is slower or stronger, but it can compound the sensitivity you both feel if it is. Rather than dwell on the discomfort, I want to provide some simple, constructive thinking points that could apply to a range of outdoor activities. I'll list them on the podcast episode page at she-explorers.com as well. Here goes. Before you head out, talk to your partner. Let your partner know where your strengths and weaknesses lie in the activity. Set expectations and come to an understanding. Will you work to balance out your complementary skills? Will one of you go ahead of the other? Will you wait if he or she is struggling? It's very easy to assume things of your partner. Communication goes a long way. The same goes for compromise. You and your partner might have different goals in the outdoors, but if a common one is experiencing the activity together, there will likely be some compromises made. If your partner is a beginner, you won't set a personal speed record for the climb. Set it another day. On the trail or climb or river, wherever you are, take stock of how your partner is doing, both visually and verbally. Check in with your partner and yourself. Are you achieving what you set out to achieve? Know that you're growing every time you step outside. You're likely getting faster and stronger and more skilled. Sometimes it happens so slowly that it's hard to benchmark. Push yourself, but try not to beat yourself up. I know, it's hard sometimes. Okay, back to the interview. Do you have female friends that you backpack with?
Not so much backpacking. Climbing, yes. And that's something that I've really been trying to focus on, just getting more outdoorsy, awesome women in my life, because I honestly can say that when I see girl crews doing cool stuff, I'm super envious, because I'm like, man, I don't have a girl crew. And like, I haven't been very good at putting myself out there because I'm kind of scared. I'm scared that other women will think I'm really weird, or they don't want to be my friend, or they think I'm like too slow or too weak. But I have been in touch with a lot of pool climbing women, and this girl I know just moved to the Bay Area, and she's just like super psyched to climb and go hang out, and we have lunch like once a week. So it's like crazy because this is so new to me. And then we have like this little Facebook group where we talk about issues like diversity or just sexism in climbing. And, you know, everyone's just really, really supportive. Growing up, I was a really, really big tomboy. So I'm just not used to it because all of my friends have always been guys. And then I'm still struggling with growing up. I always thought that having a lot of female friends meant just drama in my life. But the small friend group that I have now, or like the friend groups that I have that are all women, are totally proving that wrong. And it's just so awesome to have super supportive women to hang out with. And then when it comes to climbing, it just makes life so much easier because my boyfriend's 6'2", and he's just like, why don't you just reach for the hold? It's just like, just stand up and do it. I'm like, hello, you have a +4 ape index and I'm 5 feet tall. And so just having people who climb like me or like my height to say like, hey, why don't you try it this way or try to do it something else or like try this is really cool.
Yeah, it can be hard to find that group, but if you slowly build that group over time and put yourself out there a little bit, I'm sure you'll find women like you who want to do the outdoorsy things together.
Mm-hmm. I think just putting myself out there and not judging people based on like their Instagram or their Facebook or their site is one of the hardest things for me because I'm like, oh man, this person's so strong and they look so cool. I'm probably just not cool enough to hang out with them, which is totally not true. And I hope that that's not the impression I give off, but I'm sure like maybe some people might think that about me as well.
The internet's very deceiving.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. I mean, if you look at my Instagram, it's just like, oh, she just climbs and is never at work. And I have old coworkers who text me and they're like, where are you at right now? Like, what are you doing with your life? I'm like, I'm sitting at my desk and we work in the same city. So I'm like 3 blocks away from you, just hanging out at my desk. And I'm like, oh, well, you posted a picture from Colorado today. Well, I was in Colorado this weekend, but I came back already. That's kind of how I get through the week. If I just downtime at work or I'm waiting for someone to get back to me, I'll just scroll through photos. I'm like, oh, maybe I can post this picture because this was fun.
And you really like taking photos?
I do. I definitely don't consider myself a photographer. I kind of just point and shoot. I vaguely know how to use my camera. And then I have friends who tell me, this is an awesome photo, or this photo sucks, and this is what you did wrong, and here's what you can edit. And then that's about it.
Why do you like taking photos in the outdoors?
It's just a nice way to capture memories and remember stuff. Also, it makes for good material to scroll through when I'm commuting to work or whatnot. I don't know, it's just really nice to look back and say, hey, I did that, or I want to go back and do that.
Do you find that photos of landscape or photos of people evoke more memories for you of your outdoor experiences?
Kind of a little bit of both, but I primarily just focus on landscapes. It's hard to really take a bad photo of a landscape. I don't know, for me, taking photos of people is hard because you want them to, like, if I give somebody a photo, I want them to like how they look in it. Because when some people take photos of me, I'm just like, oh God, I look horrible. Like, what is that role? Or like, what is this face I'm making?
But that's another one of those things, though, that other people don't see that stuff. You're more likely to see that stuff.
That's true.
I never like getting my photo taken either. I'm hoping that's something that I grow out of, because I know when I'm older, I'm going to want to see photos of myself and photos of myself with my boyfriend or me with my niece or my twin sister, or, you know, whatever. So many things I need to grow out of.
Yeah, that's like one thing that's hard for me, too, because I feel like I don't have many photos of myself because I'm always the one with the camera. And I always feel bad being like, hey, can you take a photo of me? Take a photo of me doing this, take a photo of me doing that. And then I'm like, oh, well, you can just do it. I'll take a photo of you.
Do you ever do self-portraits?
I have tried a couple times. I went on my first solo backpacking trip back in October, and I brought my tripod.
How was your solo backpacking experience?
It was awesome.
Find out why after a quick break. The folks at Oro Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities.
We went to Glacier National Park over the summer.
We talked to Johnny Gall, the founder of Dirtbag Darling, about where she takes her Oro Kayak in the wild.
And it was peak tourist season, and it was also during the 100th anniversary of the Park Service, so it was just incredibly crowded. And we were getting really discouraged because all of the hiking trails looked more like conga lines of people than hiking trails. We were sitting in the parking lot just feeling kind of down, and we decided to load up the Oro kayaks in the backpacks and hike back to Hidden Lake, which is probably the most iconic spot in that park. But it's also a 6-mile hike, which isn't easy, but we did it. And because of that, we had Hidden Lake all to ourselves for the entire day, which was just, it was magical. And we paddled back to this amphitheater formation that no trail goes to. And there were probably 50 waterfalls coming down, and it was just otherworldly. And I was crying a little bit just because it was so cool and no one was back there. At the end of the day, I had quite a few blisters, but it was totally worth it for that experience in such a crowded park at such a peak tourist season.
Escape the crowds and get on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oro kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com.
It was awesome. And it was also not that awesome because when I go solo, I struggle really hard with motivating myself because, you know, I don't have to keep up with anyone. So I'm like carrying all my stuff, tripod, tent, like bear can. And I'm like, I'm just going to go as slow as possible. I'm going to take a break whenever I feel like it. And then I look at other people and they're just like breezing past me on the trail. And I'm like, where's my motivation to get to this lake so I can go do things around the lake? But at the same time, I can hike as slow as I want. I can go look at all the things I want. No one's there to yell at me to say, hey, you're going too slow, or, you know, I'm going to leave you behind. And it was really nice to get out there by myself and just enjoy my own thoughts. Which is like one thing I've really been focusing on trying to do in the last couple of years is just being comfortable by myself, going out to movies by myself, which I actually still have not done, but like going out to dinner by yourself and not feeling self-conscious like people are looking at you. It's really cool to just be able to hang out and just talk to yourself, do weird stuff.
I did my first backpacking experience. It was just like a one night overnight. But I felt like my head was so clear after it because I'd had so much time to decompress and almost meditate while hiking and not talking and just thinking and paying attention to the sounds and the smells and the weather and what I had to do next. And it was really recalibrating, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, plus the fact that you don't have cell phone reception is even better because I play with my phone so much. I have 5 minutes in between meetings, I'm on my phone. An hour before I go to bed, I'm on my phone. So just not having that was amazing.
I read the piece about diversity in the outdoors that you wrote, and you actually wrote two pieces, but could you tell the listeners what it was about?
I recently wrote a piece on diversity in outdoor media. I'm focused primarily on outdoor media just because where I live is very, very diverse on the trails. You know, you see people of all shapes and colors and sizes. So it wasn't really something that I could relate to, and I didn't feel like I could authentically write about it because anyone could say, you live in the Bay Area, what are you talking about? Like everybody kind of goes outside. What really sparked just everything was the fact that I had interacted with someone who is a very prominent figure in outdoor social media. She works for a really big, I guess not a big company, but very influential company. and she was coming out to the Bay Area for a photo shoot. This is a person who is always, you know, we need to be more inclusive, more diverse. And so I was just like, oh, hey, you know, if they need somebody else to participate in the photo shoot, just let me know, because I live here and it'd be really easy and really cool and I'd make new friends, or if you just need somebody, let me know. And then I just never ever heard back from her, which is kind of just like started the thought process about like, why do people say one thing, but then they don't really go out of their way to start enforcing what they're saying?
And why do so many of the images just seem to reflect the same types of people in outdoor media?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And you also included some actual ways that brands and outdoor media could be more inclusive.
Yes, I did. So my big things, and then again, I also don't know if these are legitimate or valid or whatever. You know, there are little steps that people or brands could take to make their images more diverse. So I know REI is really good at it. And I have friends who work with REI, and they have said that they are specifically looking for people of color to participate in their photo shoots. But then again, REI is very big, and they also have a lot of money to put towards making those demands for their photographers. Whereas, you know, smaller brands might not have that much leeway. And it turns out like the photographers get a lot of say in what their models or images look like. And so they usually just go out with their friends. But I mean, for bigger brands, I work with Outdoor Research and Mountain Hardware. And, you know, they have ambassador teams. They have athlete teams. Athlete teams aren't as diverse, but ambassador teams definitely are. And, you know, they're already part of the brand story. They're out there using the gear, doing cool things with it. Why not use them in their imagery as well?
Yeah. So you're saying that they have diverse ambassador teams?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not super duper diverse, like what you would see at the trails or like at the crag, but still more diverse than what imagery portrays.
Yeah. Yeah. The really positive thing about REI doing it is that there seems to be like REI does it and then everybody else follows when they're able to. It's a very positive that they are at the forefront of what hopefully will be a big tidal wave, but it's very discouraging in the meantime. Were you surprised by the reaction that you got to the piece?
I was actually really surprised, because people were really, really receptive to what I had to say, which for me is a little bit bizarre. I sit here in my little corner of the internet and I get enough traffic to get by, but I saw a really, really big spike in traffic that day. And like a lot of people were emailing me, commenting, messaging me privately just to say like, yes, I love what you said. This is my experience. And your words just like spoke to me. And so I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I made a lot of really cool new friends. But at the same time, I put some stuff out there and I am trying to figure out what is the next step. Where do I personally go from here? Because I said a bunch of stuff and I could be like the people that I don't really like and just say a bunch of stuff and then disappear and not do anything about it. So now I'm like, what is next?
Do you think you're going to write more thought pieces like this? Are you going to keep kind of evolving on this topic?
I honestly don't know. Sometimes I feel like I really struggle with writing things like this, because I honestly don't really think of myself as a person of color. And so for me, it's hard to say, you know, I'm a person of color when I don't really feel like, you know, I'm Asian. It sounds kind of bad to say, but, you know, I don't have many friends of color. I feel like my friend groups aren't super, like, ethnically diverse. And I don't know if I, like, really go out of my way to have, like, a very colorful friend group either. So I really struggle with identifying with that. And then, like, there are so many just Asian people in the Bay Area that it's not, like, I'm really a minority. And so it's really difficult for me to identify sometimes.
I guess the positive in that is that you already feel like the trails reflect the diverse community that you live in. So like that's really positive. So you wouldn't see yourself or anyone else who is Asian as an anomaly on the trail. I think it's great that it's not at the forefront of your thinking when you're doing outdoor activities. But it definitely sucks that it is when you're looking on social media or looking at the big brands that you want to support and buy from. But I can relate, like, I mean, I'm super white. I've never had to identify as white, and that's a luxury. So maybe in some ways you feel similarly, even though you're of Asian descent.
Yes, definitely. I don't know if more pieces are what I really want to do. I don't really consider myself a writer, first and foremost. It's sometimes I put out something and it doesn't suck that bad, but generally not so much. So it's also very bizarre because a lot of places are like, hey, we really love this piece. Pitch us more things. Pitch us more stories. And I'm like, I don't have that many stories. Like, I just go to work and I sometimes go out on the weekends. And what I really want to try to do is focus on getting the brands I work with more involved, or like local brands that I know more involved with the local community and nonprofits that are doing work to get underprivileged or minority kids outside.
Other tools that you have, other resources that you can tug on. I don't write anything unless I really, really want to write it. Like, I don't consider myself a writer either, but if I feel compelled to, I like can't not write it. So I can relate to that feeling of not wanting to force topics, but just letting them come when they do.
Mm-hmm. Or if I'm still going to go like the social media writing route, highlighting other people's work who are lesser known or who feel like they don't have a voice. One last thing I wanted to say is that, you know, if people have any ideas on like how to like diversify the outdoors and they want to like work with me, that would be super cool because I have some ideas, but I don't know how feasible they are. And I'm also I like wrote this thing and I feel like the weight of the world is on my shoulders to like do what's next. So if you have like a nonprofit that does cool stuff, or if your brand wants to like help out, I would love to just connect people to work together.
You can find Paulina Dow's thought pieces, gear reviews, and trip reports at www.littlegrunts.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with her and share your ideas, you can do so through her email address, hello@littlegrunts.com. Thank you to Paulina for sharing her indoor and outdoor life with us. Thanks as well to our sponsor, Oru Kayak, for supporting us and making this episode possible. As always, if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen. It'll help others find it. We've got some great episodes coming up, including a couple that center around conservation and what you can do to help protect our public land. Music is by Chris Zabriskie, Halogen, Lee Rosevier, and Mize through the Free Music Archive. Thanks to everyone for listening. Learn more about this and other episodes at www.she-explorers.com. And most importantly, have fun out there.